This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
You have the canceling of elections in Ukraine. You have political parties being silenced or even criminalized or thrown in prison. You have the freedom of religion, churches being shut down. You have political opposition being silenced. You have total government control of the media. We could go down a whole laundry list of issues that are against the values of democracy and freedom.
That is Tulsi Gabbard, the Director of National Intelligence. I heard her make that comment with Shannon Bream this Sunday, and it made me wonder, because I'd also heard other reports potentially of churches being shut down in the Ukraine, particularly Christian denominations, and I had questions about that. So excited to have Pastor Michael Schust on with us this morning. He is the leader of the Vertical Fellowship. And he has he's from the Czech Republic originally. He lived here in the greater St. Louis area for a long time. I believe now resides down in Florida, but runs his ministry throughout the world. And we appreciate that. Pastor, welcome to the show. How are you?
Doing good, Mark. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, it's good to have you on, sir. You know, I read some comments that you had online to somebody who had some concerns about what's going on in Ukraine, and it caught my attention because part of your comment there was you also have witnessed some of the same things that Tulsi Gabbard was pointing out there in that soundbite, that there are things going on in Ukraine, particularly regarding the Christian church there, that people probably need to be aware of.
That is correct. And it seems that reports that are given to the general American public are more consistent just with the propaganda that would like us to believe that, you know, this is sort of a democratic state where things are hunky-dory and the people are excited and happy. That is not the case. And as you know, Mark, we do international missions, and I believe your family members have actually participated with us. And we've been talking to the Ukrainians in Central Europe, particularly in Czech Republic, to the immigrants. And, you know, from the start, there have been kind of two sides of the story, and a number of these people have been sharing with us about the dark side of the story, about why they actually escaped from there. And part of the report was certainly that the church is being persecuted, and the people that are labeled as opposition are by the Azov units and being persecuted by the secret police. And so, yeah, it's I'm glad that this is all coming out now, and hopefully the international community will more about it.
Well, Pastor, the excuse for targeting certain Christians, if I understand this correctly, is the belief that somehow they are Orthodox and tied to Russia somehow has been the excuse of why some Christians have been targeted and not others. Is that correct?
That is correct. I mean, this particular case involves the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, and this is the prevalent denomination in the Ukraine. And these are people that have 30 years ago separated from the Russian Orthodox Church. But even if they didn't, you know, I mean, these are just Christians, they're believers. And right now, what is left of the population, which is basically older people and some elderly believers and their priests, because the young ones, you know, these are the parents of those that were sent to the front lines to die in this terrible war. They are being targeted as pro-Putin or pro-Russian because they originally came administratively from the same denomination, but they separated. In fact, this church has actually denounced Putin, and despite that, they've been labeled as sort of pro-Putin and enemy of the state. And I believe there are all kinds of reports and also videos that exist of these elderly people being beaten, these elderly Christians and their priests being beaten and jailed. So it's something to check out and research.
When you say the churches are also being persecuted, because you just mentioned that some of the Christians are being physically beaten, which is awful, but are they going in and trying to shut these churches down, or what are they specifically doing when they're targeting the churches?
Well, they're doing the same thing that the communists have done in the former Czechoslovakia, where I came from. So now there is, I believe the report said about 1,600 plus church buildings, many of them are historical churches, hundreds and hundreds of years old, that are being confiscated by this totalitarian Zelensky government. And then they are turned into just either civil buildings or given away or museums.
Pastor, are you still there? I feel like we've lost him. Pastor Schuster, are you still there?
It didn't make the noise to go hang up.
No, it didn't. So I'm not quite sure what has happened. Oh, there you are, sir. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
All right. I lost you in the midst of nowhere in Florida. So,
yeah. Before we run out of time, just maybe you can give people just a short background, because you said that you lived in Czechoslovakia under communist rule, and you worry that you see parallels.
Correct. This is kind of like one of those deja vus again. You know, I don't know if you've heard the entire comment on the buildings, but there are reportedly over 1,600 buildings, many of them historical buildings, hundreds of years old, confiscated by the Zelensky government, taken away from this Orthodox church and given away, made into museums or just sort of civic centers. And this church seems to be kind of under more like extermination process rather than persecution. It's really serious. And this is what the communists have done in Czechoslovakia. You know, we still have there many of those buildings that were confiscated by the communists during the communist reign and during the era, people accused of being anti-communist or anti-government. And so with these totalitarian regimes, that's how they do it. And they actually are very patient with taking sort of an administrative process, and they put it on the propaganda news. And a few months later, oh, we had to have a hearing, and we have just had to take this action because it's in the interest of national security. So that's what's going on.
Well, it's good to get that insight. And, sir, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts on that this morning and some of your experiences. Thank you. We will talk again soon. Pastor Michael Schust there from Florida this morning. And, I mean, he has connections all over the world because of his ministry, which is a vertical fellowship. And as he mentioned, he's now down in Florida. So I don't know if that wherever he was played into the connection problems. But it's important. It's a different perspective than a lot of Americans are getting on what's going on in Ukraine, which is why I wanted to have him on to talk about it.
Well, the people who really need to hear this, unfortunately, are the liberals who are just posting all the things on social media saying, I stand with Ukraine. You know, him talking about how, you know, it has kind of this deja vu feeling of when it was under communist control when he grew up, Czechoslovakia. I mean, that's scary. And Zelensky is saying his excuse for why there's been no election in how many years is
because of the Constitution or whatever.
Well, I thought he was saying it's because we're at war. We're not going to have
They didn't have election. They don't have elections during wartime.
Right. And that should not be okay. We would never do that here in the United States.
No, I would agree with that. So I wanted people to hear that perspective.
perspective this morning. Coming up here in just a couple of minutes, we're going to talk to Jenna Ellis. She, of course, used to work for Donald Trump. She's now a senior advisor for the American Family Association. The topic, should Donald Trump be able to run for a third term? A bill has been introduced in Congress that would do just that. We'll get to Jenna right after the break. All right, you're hearing the Mardi Gras theme there from Carl the Maestro, who's getting a few complaints about the music this morning.
Except Scott was complaining about the music that Todd Pyro picked.
Oh, okay. All right, which we're not going to play anymore moving forward.
Next week it will be back to Tina Turner.
That's a good thing. All right, so I don't know if you've heard this or not, but there is somebody's floated. I think Andy Ogles is the congressman who's floated the idea that they should change the rules so that Donald Trump could run for a third term. Now, I don't know that he's serious about it or that it could ever get through Congress. But we've got Jenna Ellis on the phone with us this morning, a senior advisor, former Trump attorney, but a senior advisor for the American Family Association. She's got her own radio show now, Jenna Ellis in the Morning. How are you, Jenna?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. And happy Fat Tuesday. I didn't actually realize that was today until the opening music. So yeah. I appreciate that.
Carl's been reminding everybody of that this morning. There's no doubt about it. That's for sure. So on this issue, I guess, first of all, what is your relationship with Donald Trump these days? Because I know that, I mean, you had less than flattering things to say about him after the last election cycle. Are you guys on speaking terms?
Yeah, sure. And, that's the nature of primaries, is that we all can support our preferred candidate. And I will always choose the most conservative option, because I'm a Christian first and foremost. And I was a conservative long before Donald Trump ever ran, beginning in 2015. So, of course, supported my home state governor, DeSantis. But like him, he also endorsed and supported Donald Trump in the general. And I think that most conservatives did that. And I've been incredibly proud of President Trump and all of his picks for everything that they've accomplished in the last few weeks. So Trump 2.0 is really great, and I'm all for it.
Yeah, do you think he would seriously consider a third term? Now, I know this is all like pie in the sky stuff, because getting it through, a 2-vote margin in the House and ever getting the Senate to consider changing this would be a tall order, I think. But do you think it's something Trump would consider?
I think Trump absolutely would consider it. And the fact that he's even floated it just shows that, he's interested in that, if that were ever an option. And obviously the U.S. Constitution, because of the 22nd Amendment, does not allow that procedurally right now. But you mentioned Congress, and actually Article 5 has another method that we can amend the U.S. Constitution as we the people, that bypasses Congress and allows the state legislatures, through that same 2/3 majority, to propose amendments to the Constitution that then would have to be ratified by 3/4 of the states. And if you look at the number of Americans, the strong approval rating, the posture currently of the Republican-led state legislatures, I'm more convinced that if this ever were going to be an option, it wouldn't come through Congress, it would come from the state legislatures.
So that would essentially be put on the ballot for us for the next upcoming election, and each state would have to do it individually?
No, it's not in the ballot. Article 5 provides two ways to amend the U.S. Constitution. We've done it 27 times in our nation's history. That's only been through Congress proposing amendments. This would be the state legislature, in the exact same way that Congress would have to pass a petition through 2/3 of each of the houses. The state legislatures would also have to pass a petition. It can't go to the ballot. It's not a citizen's initiative. It is the state legislatures that would pass essentially a bill or a resolution through their state legislature. And interestingly, we have over 400 live petitions for different constitutional amendments that have been passed through state legislatures, but they've never agreed on the subject matter. So we've never gotten to that 2/3 threshold. But if we got to 2/3 of the states that have the same petition, then we would call what is a convening or a convention of the states, and then delegates from the states would go formalize the language of the amendment. If that passes through that convention, it would go to the states to ratify by 3/4, the exact same way that a congressional proposition for an amendment would.
Huh. So it would still be a tall order, Jenna. I mean, I'm sure you've probably done the math, but I know Republicans control the majority of state houses in the country. state governments, but I don't think they have two-thirds, do they?
I think my last count, and I could be wrong on this, but I think that Republicans control 27 currently.
Okay. All right.
So I think it's doable. And I think that that it's possible, but it certainly is a tall order, and it would be very difficult for the next 4 years for this to happen that soon. But I could see an instance where Republican state legislatures would get together and say, you know, hey, this isn't unprecedented in America's history. Of course, we have Roosevelt that served four terms. That was why the 22nd Amendment was proposed and ratified. But this would simply be amending the Constitution to allow Trump to do what Roosevelt did. So yeah. Procedurally, it's possible.
Could Congress then, if that were to happen, could Congress go and eventually reverse it, though, so that future presidents couldn't do that?
We can always amend the Constitution. That's the brilliance of our founders, because when they originally ratified the Constitution, they said, well, you know, if we want to make any procedural changes, not changes to our substantive rights that are pre-political, but if we want to make changes, we can go in and change things procedurally. So they can't do that and change the Constitution by legislation or by an act of Congress, but they can propose amendments. So they could undo the will of the states. If the states ended up passing this amendment, then Congress could go back. But the states still would have to pass Congress's change. By three-fourths.
Jenna,
so this is the brilliance of the separation of powers.
We've run out of time. Thank you for your time. AFA.net is the American Family Association. Good talking to you. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
All right, take care. Jenna Ellis there. Coming up, we'll get Ryan Wiggins in the studio in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned.
Donald Trump and the Republican Party has changed the electorate. What do I mean by that? Well, let's take a look at party identification, Democrats versus Republicans. You go back to 2017, 5 points more of the electorate was Democrats than Republicans. You go to 2021 when Joe Biden was starting out, look at that, 6 points more of the electorate was Democrats than Republicans. But look at what's happened in February of 2025. Look at this. Republicans, there are more Republicans in the electorate than there are Democrats. Republican plus two. So Donald Trump and the Republicans have remade the electorate. They've turned some people over from being Democrats or independents to become Republicans. New folks have entered the electorate who are more Republican leaning.
Wiggins! Oh! Wiggins!
All right, Ryan is in studio with us right now. That's a 7-point swing. That's huge.
That's a 7-point swing from Donald Trump's first term. It's an 8-point swing from 2021. So it's even more recently. But I think that the Trump to Trump comparison is the important one, which is one you just grabbed onto there, which is that was a negative 5 in 2017 approval rating or people who identify with him. But now it's plus 2 Republicans, a huge, massive swing. And that's CNN reporting that, by the way.
What's their definition of the electorate? Is that registered voters? Is that likely voters? People or everybody who's registered, but maybe not all of them vote?
In that particular poll, I'm going to assume, because CNN usually does registered voters,
Okay. Then
I'm assuming Harry Enten being on CNN is referring to registered voters. But that's great, because that's the whole electorate, is what he's talking about. Registered voters now identify more as Republicans, I think for the first time maybe in my lifetime. I have never heard that before. Maybe for a brief period after 9/11, but that might have been it.
Yeah. Or maybe after, and even after Reagan won, what Reagan did was sway a bunch of people they referred to as Reagan Democrats. Maybe a bunch of them became Republicans. I don't know, but it's been a long time since Republicans have outnumbered Democrats in this country in terms of voter registration.
Well, you're right, and that would have been in my lifetime, but I wouldn't have remembered it very well. I'm not
Are
that old.
Are you saying I'm old?
No, Ryan I'm
Wiggins,
not saying
that's,
you're
that's
old.
That's the messaging I'm getting
here. I'm saying
here.
I'm young. In fact, thank you for bringing up that point, because what Harry Enten and what you were just saying... is that there are a lot of people now, for some reason, identifying as Republicans who never have before. So let's look even more at the data from Rasmussen that just came out yesterday. They looked at Trump's overall approval among different age demographics. You know where it's the lowest? The oldest people.
I've heard that.
I saw that number, and I'm like, is it really... that would be groundbreaking if those younger person numbers are real, Ryan.
But here's the question. Is it that they don't support Trump and they support like a Joe Biden, or they don't really support any of them? Because I feel like, and I know I'm younger than both of you, but I feel like the quote unquote Democrats back in the day, certainly more liberal than I would ever want to, you know, attach myself to, but they were more conservative than they are now. Like the typical Democrat now is very different, much more progressive than they were back then. So some of the people who might have voted Democrat are just saying, well, now they're too far left. I'm now just going to go Republican. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Now, first of all, Trump is not too far underwater with people 65 and up. He's only at 45%, which is not too far.
It's not bad, yeah.
No.
But it's even 40 to 64 year olds. He's only at 46%. So the weird thing is that Trump is typically conservatives tend to be for the older generation because they're, you know,
they have money and they want to keep it.
Back in my day,
you're the status quo. You're conserving. You're not liberal. You're not changing.
Yeah. Well,
Trump is a change.
We didn't have people who dressed up as furries, used litter boxes.
So Trump
is
coming in.
They just did it in private. Go ahead.
Just rocking. He's changing everything. And so the older you are, the more you are. I mean, this is psychological. The more you are kind of in the mold. You're part of the system and you're like, whoa, this is a lot too fast. Whereas the younger generation now, according to Rasmussen, 18 to 39, which I'm just barely outside of.
That's my age group.
And that's you.
Mm-hmm.
60% approval rating.
Let's go.
So the growth in the Republican Party right now is happening among people under 40, 18 to 40 years old. You've got to enjoy that, right?
Absolutely.
You want some more numbers?
Yeah, I'd love to hear more numbers, but primarily I want to enjoy that one for a moment.
Okay, we'll just stop.
If that's true... it gives me hope for the future for my children and my grandchildren, because I'll tell you what, three or four years ago, when Joe Biden gets elected, there's all these questions about how he got elected and who in the world gave him 80 million votes. I was really starting to worry about how many more generations this country would have.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously.
So I am pulling up right now another one that I just can't believe because this is happening so fast. But this is a lot of these numbers that you see, like the polling numbers, for instance, most of them are basing their numbers on the last election. So who turned out for that election? That's how they base it. That's a good way to do it. But a lot of these numbers I'm about to give you are since the election. New Jersey, Republicans have gained 10,000 voters just in January, while Democrats lost 2,000. North Carolina, Democrats' registration lead has shrunk, which they've always had. North Carolina has been a fairly red state, swing state, but red state. The registration advantage for Democrats has shrunk from 322,000 to just 37,000.
Hmm.
In Nevada, Republicans now outnumber Democrats in active voter registrations for the first time in over 20 years.
Well, the telltale sign of this, if these are true numbers, which I assume they are, but the upcoming election, the midterm election, is there going to be this kind of red wave that we thought we would see a few years ago and just never came to fruition? Are the Democrats going to somehow make a comeback?
That's a good question.
Might be a little early.
It is early.
I mean, it's going to depend on how the political winds blow, right?
Well, yeah, if Trump continues succeeding and winning over people, that could have a huge impact.
A year from now. But they're going to do, as you've seen from Chris Murphy and some of these others, everything they can legally and otherwise between now and then to try to trip him up. Maybe even on foreign policy. It sounds like they're trying to dabble and screw up the foreign policy decisions right now if they really met with Zelensky before he met with Trump.
It does. One more number for you really quick.
Well, Jackie said on YouTube, by the way, she would like more numbers. So
let's give it to her.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie.
So the polls that have come out since Friday, which is since the Zelensky-Trump meeting in the Oval Office, some of them don't include all of Friday, like it was a lot skewed before that. But the couple that do, CBS News and INI, both have him at +3, +2. Emerson came out just this weekend, so it fully has all the numbers from since that meeting, which you'd think, based on the panic in the media, that people are freaking out over that, right?
Yeah.
That, oh, people, oh, my gosh.
Oh, can you believe it's the worst thing ever?
That went so poorly. I can't believe this is terrible. I can't believe this guy's my president. This is from Emerson. This isn't even a right-leaning poll. Just this weekend, +5 on approval rating. So it actually went up, according to Emerson's own polling, after that meeting.
People, I think, realize that this is a guy, Trump, who's going to stick up for our country, and he's very transparent. It was borderline awkward, but in a good way, to watch all of that play out, because you know those types of conversations are had behind closed doors.
Right.
This is the first time in my lifetime, as someone in their mid-30s, I've never seen that on air, or like actually watching it on television. It was wild, but I appreciated
it. It's the tension of that, I think, that most people would try to avoid, right? Yeah. Like, I know people that if they're watching a like a drama or a TV show and it gets too awkward, they'll get up and leave the room. There are people that don't like that confrontation at all.
Right.
But it's clearly something that's given Trump the art of the deal over the years, and he's very good at it, and he knows exactly what to do in those situations. I don't, whether you liked it or not, it was effective and it showed leadership.
It's important in the midst of all of the panic that you see, these loud voices yelling, to look at numbers like that.
Yep.
And see, what does America really think? Well, they're really still behind him.
Yeah, post Oval Office meltdown, they're still behind him there by Zelensky. The meltdown by Zelensky, I should say. All right, can you hang out, Ryan?
Yeah.
All right, Ryan Wiggins, staying in studio with us. Stay tuned.
I just love this story so much. That's the crowd going wild after a 10-year-old boy from Kirkwood made a game-winning half-court buzzer beater. I mean, this was nuts. This little 10-year-old Noah Gribb, I think is his name. His team was down 24-22, seconds remaining in the game. Buzzer's going off, just like basically chucks it across the court, you know, from halfway and makes it. And his team is just adorable. They're all running and they just collapse on the court because they're just stunned that this 10-year-old teammate of theirs just made a half-court shot.
What was his name?
Noah Gribbs, G-R-I-B.
Way to go, Noah.
Yeah.
Everybody, that's the shot everybody takes when you're on the playground and you're trying to throw it from halfway across the court and most of us never come close, and he pulled it off in the game. Good for him.
I love it.
I have a logistical question.
How's that? What's that?
Is the game over officially when the buzzer starts or when the buzzer ends?
I thought it was if the ball's leaving your hand, as long as it's left your hand and the buzzer's going off. Am I correct in that?
You have to take the shot before the buzzer goes.
Before it starts.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So as long as it's zero, midair,
if it's out of your hands, it'll still count.
So I've seen a lot of shots. And in fact, when I was in high school, we had one of those. It was Collinsville versus Edwardsville. And it was whoever won the game was going to state, you know. So we had big rivalry.
Yeah.
And I was just in the crowd with a bunch of my friends and some football players who were there to support the basketball players. And I think his name was Kevin Whiteside, took the shot when I was a senior in high school. And it was from like our own free throw line, that far back.
Wow.
And we were down by two. He takes that shot, and I swear that shot was definitely not out of his hands by the time the buzzer went off, but it was by the time the buzzer ended, but it went in. And we obviously, the crowd went insane, and the referee, it was like he didn't have the heart to say no, and so we won the game. And it was on Good Morning America. It was a big, big deal.
So there was video of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, it would have been obvious then wouldn't it? If it wasn't.
But they didn't. But they don't go to the video.
They don't
back
go to
then.
The video in high school.
Yeah.
Right.
It's almost such an incredible shot. Everyone's just stunned that you made it. So you feel bad saying no. Like this little kid, it seemed like it was out of his hands by the time the buzzer's going off. But it was just so incredible because it's impressive even if someone in high school makes that. But then you think about a little 10-year-old boy making that shot.
Yeah.
It's pretty adorable.
Yeah, that's
guy's gonna be a stud in school,
or he
he's
at
gonna
10.
Be very popular, or he peaked at 10.
Let's hope not.
Remember glory days? Remember back in third grade when I made that shot? That's
my husband always jokes that his glory days were in third grade. Every time he tells a story, he's like, "I was third grade." Like, did anything else happen after that? Like, I think he won the spelling bee and all these things.
He met you.
Well, yeah,
that's
of course.
Thank you, Carl.
You better in third grade.
That's right. Has a son. Now we're having another child.
Michael, that's when you peaked.
See? You peaked after third grade. Are you listening?
You met Kim.
You tell him, Carl.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Hey, just a quick reminder that we got the Brian Kilmeade event coming up. Ryan, are you planning to attend that event?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Kim, are you planning to attend that event?
I'm not sure yet.
To be announced. It's coming up on March 22nd. We're all going to be out at the factory with Brian Kilmeade, and it's going to be awesome. And there are some VIP opportunities available. So let's say you've already bought your tickets. You can add on a VIP experience. And we're proud that we have some a sponsor for that. Bob and Tammy Kershaw from the Retirement Advisory Group are now the proud sponsors of the Brian Kilmeade visit to St. Louis, and we appreciate that. So you'll get an opportunity to
to hang out at, before the event with me and Wiggins here, and Annie and Mark are going to be there. I don't know who else. Maybe Carl. I don't know who all's going.
I'm
going
to be at the Blues Blackhawks game.
You've got a Blues
Sorry.
Game that night. But a lot of people from 97.1 will be there along with Brian Kilmeade, and we'll all go hang out in the VIP area ahead of time, and then you can go back out to your seats for Brian's show. This may be a sellout, and I heard capacities over there is like 1,300. Is that right?
Oh, no.
I thought it was 3,000.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Triple that.
Well, I didn't know that. So
Brian Kilmeade is calling this the biggest event in St. Louis history.
The biggest event in his St. Louis history.
Yeah. Yeah. But it actually may, he's doing a little tour. I think this may be the biggest stop he's making.
I believe he said that. If this will be like one of his biggest venues, and if it sells out, it'll be, I guess, maybe the biggest crowd he's done this in.
I want that for him then, because then he can just think of St. Louis as, wow, you guys are really supportive.
Exactly. He loves St. Louis.
Yeah, there was a good turnout when we had that event. Oh, gosh, was that like a
year
and a half,
been
year and a half ago?
We've actually aired him for longer than almost any city in the country, and so he has a particular fondness for us. That's every time he comes, he talks about that.
Nice.
Yeah, a great guy. Hopefully you get to meet him if you do that VIP experience. 971talk.com. You can find all the details on the Brian Kilmeade visit. And if you hang out for about four more minutes, you can hear the Brian Kilmeade show after the top of the hour.
Wow.
Can you believe it?
Look how that worked out.
I don't know how that happens. And then, of course, you can hear Wiggins later today on the Annie Fry Show, noon to 3, and then Reardon after that. We'll see you back here Wednesday morning at 5 a.m. Have a great night.
Get more at 971talk.com.